Mr. Speaker.
Order, order.
Parliament's adjourned for a week, taking a short breather after a four-week sitting period that began with Finance Minister Bill English presenting his eighth budget and ended with him keeping a tight hold on the purse strings by killing off a members' bill that would have added $70 million a year to extend paid parental leave from 18 to 26 weeks over the next 4 years. That's less than 1% of total annual government spending of $80 billion, of which about a fifth will be spent on health, although whether that's more or less in real terms remained in dispute as the battle between health ministers past and present continued in Tuesday's question time.
Oh, he's such a nasty little man.
Well, Mr. Speaker, why doesn't that member admit that she keeps on making up figures which are completely untrue?
Health Minister Jonathan Coleman and his Labour shadow, Annette King, carried their fight into the committee rooms the next day, although now back on first-name terms.
These are the same figures used.
But it didn't last.
Minister, can you just have some questions and for once try to stop the abuse and answer questions.
Back in the chamber, Mrs. King's questions for the minister included this one.
Why not admit that he's been caught out trying to cover up accumulated shortfalls in the health budget since 2010-11, affecting people like Sharon Cooper in desperate need of knee surgery, and has been declined three times in the last year so far?
Well, the Honourable Dr. Jonathan Coleman.
Well, Mr. Speaker, why doesn't that member admit that she keeps on making up figures which are completely untrue? I don't know Sharon Cooper, but rather than exploiting that person, why doesn't she ring up my office and we can see if we can do something for her? Of course, when you're losing the argument on funding, you try personal attacks.
Yeah. That's calling the kettle black.
Order.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Order.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Annie King.
I seek leave to table my letter to the Minister of Health, writing about Sharon Cooper on his request, which he hasn't bothered to reply to
Speaker. The last part. Order. The date of the letter, please.
31st of May.
Okay.
Come on.
Now we have the leave the matter. Order. Order. Leave us sought to table a letter from the member to the minister dated the 31st of May. Is there any objection to it being tabled? There is not objection, it can be tabled.
Greens co-leader James Shaw adopted a similar tactic on Wednesday when dissatisfied with the Prime Minister's answer to one of his questions on homelessness.
I seek leave to table Otago University research from June the 3rd, 2016 that shows that homelessness in New Zealand has grown 25%.
I will put the leave. Leave is sought to table that particular University of Otago research. Is there any objection to it being tabled? There is objection.
Mr. Shaw complained to the Speaker, David Carter.
It's becoming an increasing tactic of the Prime Ministers and the governments to answer questions simply by quibbling the numbers in the opposition's questions, knowing full well that we're not able to table the data afterwards. And I'm just wondering if you think that that is an adequate way of responding to questions.
Mr. Carter heard from the government's leader of the House.
Oh, I'll hear from the Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it is the prerogative of the House to choose. Any member, in fact, can decide that they do not want to support the tabling of information. This particular information is not reliable. We do know about it. And it has, for example, people living with relatives recorded as homeless.
I was ever hopeful that it might have been a helpful point of order. But
the Speaker then gave Mr. Shaw some advice.
Once a member, in putting forward a supplementary question, decides to include some figures, then it's always the option of a minister or a prime minister to then dispute the question. So my advice to the members to think whether he could tighten questions up, don't include such statistics unless they're essential to the question, and at least then it doesn't give the opportunity for a minister in responding to dispute the questions. On the final point raised by Mr. Brownlee, he is quite right. I decide whether to put the leave. I put the leave. It is the prerogative of any member to then decide to decline that leave.
And so the Greens co-leader dropped the fancy footwork and went for the jugular.
When was the last time that the Prime Minister walked down Queen Street or Lambton Quay or Colombo Street and noticed the growing number of people sleeping in shop doorways and thought to himself, this is the brighter future I promised 8 years ago?
Yeah, right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr Speaker, as I go around New Zealand, what I do see is a country that is a lot more confident in itself. It sees high growth around the country. I see a lot of optimism and people benefiting from the National-led government. And I think that's why this government's enjoyed the kind of electoral support we have.
You see the people sleeping in doorways, does he?
Order.
And following Mrs King's success in highlighting the plight of one individual, her caucus colleague, Grant Robertson, tried this question on Finance Minister Bill English.
Has the Minister seen any reports about the fact that the economy has delivered an increase in homelessness in the largest cities in New Zealand and has delivered to an 11-year-old girl who only wants to do her homework the prospect of living in a car with six other people? And when will he stop being so arrogant about the economy?
The last part is not necessary. The Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr Speaker, I can assure the member that we will not be exploiting the complexity and vulnerability of that child and her family. And the member, before he raises that issue publicly, ought to go and consult with the family to ensure that this is what they want for their child.
Although Bill English was on his feet answering questions on Thursday, no one asked him about his use of the financial veto to prevent the passing of Sumaroni's paid parental leave bill, announced before question time by the Speaker.
Members, the government has delivered to the clerk a certificate not concurring in the parental leave and employment protection 6 months paid leave amendment bill. The bill may still be debated, but the Speaker will not put a question on the third reading at the conclusion of the debate.
It's the first time since the veto was introduced in 1996 to give the government complete control over its spending in the new multi-party parliaments elected under MMP that it's been used to stop a whole bill in its tracks, although it's frequently deployed to block amendments to legislation that would have more than a minor impact on the government's overall financial position. In this case, though, it has the added benefit of avoiding another government defeat on a members' night, when Sumaroni's bill has been steadily advancing on the narrow margin of 61 to 60 that the three main opposition parties have when their combined 58 votes are supplemented by the 3 votes of the Māori Party and United Futures Peter Dunn. Having seen her hopes of extending paid parental leave to 26 weeks supported by that coalition of parties over the past 4 years, Ms Moroney reminded the House that her bill also had numbers outside the House.
I seek leave to table a petition signed by 16,085 people for Parliament for John Key and Bill English to respect Parliament's will and the needs of children and their families and not veto the bill extending paid parental leave to 26 weeks.
Leaders taught to table that petition. Is there any objection? There is no objection. It can be tabled.
And will be filed without being referred to a select committee. Talking of which, here's Rhys Lyon.
Select committees continued their scrutiny of this year's budget allocations for government departments during the week, with ministers called on to front up to defend their spending plans. Among them was Justice and Courts Minister Amy Adams.
In budget this year, we have had an investment of more than $208.4 million. That's the biggest increase into the vote for almost a decade. And in addition to that figure today, I'm also going to be announcing that Budget 16 included a commitment of sufficient new funding to fund the restoration of Dunedin's historic courthouse.
Appearing before the Justice and Electoral Committee, Ms Adams faced questions from committee members about the Cabinet's decision not to inflation-adjust compensation for Taina Pora for his wrongful conviction. Ms Adams stood by the government's decision to pay Mr Pora $100,000 for each year he was in prison.
The $100,000 actually still sits very well in terms of international measures for the amounts of compensation. Actually, in the UK, if you've had more than 10 years in prison, your total compensation is capped at £1 million. If you're in the US, the annual rate is somewhere between $18,000 and $100,000 across different states. And I've made it very clear that Cabinet is of the view, as other governments have been, that the system is best served when there is a standard system and approach that is applied across every case. The Cabinet doesn't start picking and choosing.
Justice Minister Amy Adams. And appearing before the Health Committee this week, Health Minister Jonathan Coleman outlined his ministry's goals.
This government has focused very much on results, and that's why we've been, you know, absolutely committed to delivery against health targets. And when you look at performance, I think it's very clear that that has been a justified approach. So access to elective surgery.
A question on that came from Labor's health spokeswoman and health committee member, Annette King.
You quote the 50,000 extra electives. How many of the 50,000 were done under Labor's 2008-09 budget, which you actually continue to include in your figures?
Yeah, how many do you reckon?
About 12,000.
No, well, I don't think that's right. I mean,
but why do you include Labor's figures in your 50,000?
Basically, if you look at that 50,000, there's been a huge increase from the time when Labor were managing elective surgery.
Meanwhile, over at the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, Defence Minister Gerry Brownlee gave a roundup of highlights of the past year for the New Zealand Army, including this.
We recently carried out a very large exercise in Fiji following Cyclone Winston, largest deployment of New Zealand troops to one place since the Second World War.
But that claim didn't sound right to Labour Party committee member Phil Gough.
We had a whole battalion in Timor-Leste. How could it be the largest ever?
Well, I'll tell you what, if that's the worst I do today, then I'm happy about it. What's the story there?
largest humanitarian assistance.
Oh, humanitarian. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. My sincere apologies, Mr. Chairman, for slipping a word out of my pre-prepared notes. And well done, Mr. Gough. It's incredibly sharp of you. Bodes better for Auckland than I had thought. But anyway,
Defence Minister Gerry Brownlee. Also this week, a handful of government bills passed their first readings and were sent to select committees for scrutiny, where they'll be subject to public submissions. The Children, Young Persons and Their Families, Advocacy, Workforce and Age Settings Amendment Bill, which among other things raises the state care leaving age from 17 to 18, was referred to the Social Services Committee to be reported back by October the 17th. The Local Government Act 2002 Amendment Bill number 2 was referred to the Local Government and Environment Committee to be reported back by October the 28th. And the Contract and Commercial Law Bill and a Taxation Bill were sent off to the Justice and Electoral and Finance and Expenditure Committees respectively. To make a submission on bills before select committees, go to our website parliamenttoday.co.nz and click on Make Submission at the top of the page.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Back in the chamber, the week began with this motion from the Prime Minister, John Key.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House express sympathy with the victims of the Orlando shooting. This is a shocking atrocity, and on behalf of all New Zealanders, I'd like to express our country's sincere condolences to those affected by it. As I said yesterday, no innocent person should have to worry about such violence when going about their daily lives, or be persecuted for their beliefs or because of who they are. The evening vigils that took place in Auckland, Wellington and elsewhere were a tangible demonstration of the depth of people's very real feelings at the scale of this atrocity. Over the days and weeks ahead, we will learn more about the motivations behind this senseless tragedy. But right now, there are many people grieving, the victims' families and friends, and the gay and lesbian community in Florida and around the world. All too often we see these hateful attacks and mass shootings taking the lives of innocent victims. New Zealand stands with the United States and other countries in the fight against violent extremism. Yesterday I wrote to President Obama to express condolences on behalf of all New Zealanders. Our thoughts are with the victims, their families and friends, and to those that responded to this tragic attack. And we wish those injured in it a speedy recovery.
The question is the motion be agreed to.
Mr. Speaker.
Andrew Little.
Mr. Speaker, the Labor Party joins with the government in expressing our horror at this atrocity, and our love and sympathy are with the victims and their families. Our thoughts are with the people of Orlando and the United States, as well as their representatives here in New Zealand. Mr. Speaker, this was an atrocious and hateful act. It was an act of terror. It was also an act of hate. It was a targeted attack at the LGBTI community. It was the deliberate mass murder of LGBTI people because of who they were and who they loved. These young people were attacked and murdered in a place that was meant to be safe for them. that was meant to be a haven where they could go to dance and have fun and be themselves. This was a place where they wouldn't be subject to homophobia or violence or hatred. And in that place, in that sanctuary, they were murdered in cold blood. Mr. Speaker, like millions of people around the world, we've all seen the heartbreaking details of what emerged about the shooting. The stories of first responders arriving at the scene to a chorus of ringing cell phones as the families of those hurt and killed desperately tried to contact their loved ones. The story of Eddie Justice, who was able to hide in the bathroom of the nightclub long enough to send his mother a text telling her he loved her, and whose mother then had to read the horrifying words, "He's coming, I'm gonna die." Mr. Speaker, this attack has broken hearts around the world. But while we mourn and grieve, we must also rededicate ourselves to the great universal values of humanity, which attacks like this seek to deny and destroy. Inclusion, openness, respect, love. We must reaffirm our commitment to a society where everyone is free to love who they choose, worship how they choose, and to be themselves without fear of violence or repression. We must reaffirm our commitment to ending bigotry and intolerance and hatred wherever we find it, because that's what the path of true freedom demands. While we grieve and we mourn, we remind ourselves that love is love and love is stronger than hate, and that together we will not let hate win.
Kevin Hague.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to support the Prime Minister's motion and to thank him for it. The Green Party wishes to express our profound shock and sorrow at what has occurred and our sympathies to the victims themselves, to their families, to their friends, and to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex communities in Orlando and around the world. An attack against one of us is an attack against all of us. I want to name this as an act of homophobic violence. For those of us who are in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex communities, we know that just below the level of taunts and name-calling and subtle prejudice, there is an undercurrent of violence. In this particular case, in Orlando, America's absurd gun laws have been a unique enabler for the mass murder that has occurred. But New Zealand has a history of homophobic violence also, sir. And one thinks, for example, of Jeff Whittington, who just over 17 years ago was murdered in this town. Mr. Speaker, it should not be that when I and my partner or any from our communities is out in public, that we should have to check who is around before we kiss or hold hands. And yet, sir, it is so. Mr. Speaker, at this time, I want to ask everyone in this House and everyone listening to this debate now to pay particular attention to the needs of young and vulnerable members of our communities. For older members of the gay community, for example, like me, we have the privilege of being able to choose whom we associate with. We have the relative privilege of being able to make ourselves as safe as we can be. But a younger person does not have that privilege, sir. They are particularly vulnerable. They need our support and they need our love right now. Mr. Speaker, I want to extend a hand of friendship and of love to Muslim communities around the world also, sir. We understand that what this man did is not representative of your communities, and we seek relationships that are based on peace and mutual respect. But Mr. Speaker, a belief that gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered and intersex people are not entitled to what we call universal human rights, or worse, a belief that we deserve death for being who we are, cannot be allowed to stand in the world, sir. And in closing, sir, the Green Party, and I hope this House, commit ourselves to act against homophobia and homophobic violence, and indeed transphobic violence, wherever it occurs in the world. And we seek to be a constant voice in the world for the universal respect for basic human rights. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Peter Dunn.
Mr. Speaker, no words, no spin, no gloss can carry over the events that occurred in Orlando yesterday. The slaughter of nearly 50 innocent people is unacceptable by any moral or ethical standard. Equally unacceptable, I think, sir, is the sort of intolerance and the bigotry, because that is what it is, that gets paraded at a time like this as people start to attempt to explain these unacceptable actions. Mr. Speaker, I believe that bigotry begets bigotry, and that in turn begets the type of extremism that we saw exemplified in Orlando yesterday. Mr. Speaker, this is not an issue where one makes a moral judgment about anybody. The fact is that these young gay and lesbian people were out socialising, something they should have been able to do in perfect freedom, in perfect security, and in perfect confidence. A madman, because that is the one thing that is certain about the perpetrator, cruelly ended that. And the questions will go on for some time as to why and how. And there will be questions about the United States' attitude to the possession of handguns. There will be questions about the motivation of the individual. None of those actually remove the tragedy of what happened. None of those restore any of those lives, rebuild any of those families or those friendships, or rebuild those shattered communities. Mr. Speaker, we are a long way away, and I'm sure that the people of the United States are not sitting by their televisions now hanging on our every words, but our expression of sympathy and solidarity with them at this time of grief counts in that it shows that as members of the world community, we actually share some basic values about integrity, we share some basic values about freedom, we share some basic values about people being able to live their lives and express their personalities to the fullest extent. Mr. Speaker, every time we see an event like this, it is a challenge to all of those values that we hold dear, even if we may not be immediately near the scene of the crime. So I share with others the sense of outrage, the expression of condolence and sympathy to the people of the United States, and Orlando in particular, on this horrific occasion. But to start to go beyond that, to draw spurious conclusions at this early stage, Mr. Speaker, I simply think starts to light the fuse for the next horrible outrage, and that is unacceptable.
Mr. Speaker.
David Seymour.
I would like to add the ACT Party's sympathy and condolences to those messages from other leaders who have made dignified and factual contributions to this debate. And Mr. Speaker, it is a great tragedy, and our thoughts are with the victims, with their families, with their communities, and particularly the LGBTI communities of Orlando who appear to have been deliberately targeted. And let us remain strong in the knowledge that free and open societies have the resilience to sustain these tragedies, to support each other, and to grow stronger again together.
The Honourable Te Uruarau Flavel.
Parliament.
Te mone hutanga te whakapua ki te ara tauroa. Ki ngā pae pae maunga. I koia e te tine. E te mano. Kia tau ki te toka o mahara. E tangi nei e te haumaranga e mate. E ngau kino nei te aroha e.
Koe nei tā koe rongo nei tēnei ahi ai. Kei tangu rangatira. Whakai atu ki tō kōrera. Tēnā koutou, huri noa, kia ora tātā.
Speaker.
The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Mr. Speaker, New Zealand First tenders our condolences, sympathy, deep concern and regret to the people of Orlando and the USA at this latest terrorist massacre. We in New Zealand First are opposed to religious extremism in any form, and this atrocity resulted from Islamic extremism by a terrorist whose family had sought shelter in the United States. There are those, sir, who will take the politically correct view and blame it all on a lack of gun control. They are wrong. They have been misled. They are seeking to divert blame from where it should lie, because this terrorist could have used any weapon of destruction, a bomb, an improvised device, a method of mass poisoning, and blaming lack of gun control is seen this way, in our view, simply as a cop-out. In the San Bernardino case last year, two extremists gave their baby to someone to look after and set out to cause massacre, and when they were discovered, or their home was discovered, improvised explosive devices were present as well. Now, we have New Zealand cases as well of loose border and security controls. Do people remember the hijacking of a plane out of Blenheim by someone that a political party said should not be here? Or the fact that we couldn't find a henchman of Saddam Hussein, and when immigration did, they found a diplomat who had no connection with him at all, and when it was all over, it was found that he should not have been here in the first place. And there are countless examples now where border control officers are making a judgment and having it overruled by others on the basis that they are safe. In short, sir, we are inviting that problem in our country by the looseness and the cavalier attitude we are taking as a country to matters of security. And this is not crap, it is a fact. And those who would defend what's gone on here without knowing who they've brought here and how they've brought it here will one day be weeping crocodile tears pretending that they sought to take action.
Immigration came up again on Tuesday in an application to the Speaker for a snap debate.
I have received a letter from Andrew Little seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the announcement of the decision to increase the refugee quota to 1,000.
Mr. Carter said the issue met two of the criteria for snap debates, but said it also had to justify the House setting aside its usual business, and there would be other opportunities for debate.
The estimates debate must be held before the end of August, and that provides an opportunity to debate the economic and infrastructure sector, which includes immigration and refugee resettlement.
Mr. Carter noted that the new policy did not come into effect for 2 years.
There will be several other wide-ranging debates that provide opportunities to address this issue. For example, there will be a debate on the Prime Minister's statement and another budget debate before the policy comes into force. On that basis, I cannot accept the matter requires the urgent attention of the House despite its importance. The application is therefore declined.
Finally, a look ahead with the Leader of the House.
The Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Mr. Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday, the 28th of June, the Government will look to complete the Appropriation 2015-16 Supplementary Estimates Bill, the Impress Supply First for 2016-17 Bill, and a number of other bills in the order paper. Wednesday will be a Members' Day.
And when we last looked, the Members' Order paper was still topped by the third and final reading of Sue Moroney's Paid Parental Leave Bill. For its part, the government got three bills passed this week, the Coroner's Amendment Bill and two bills enabling the use of some 40 hectares of the Riccarton Racecourse to be developed for housing. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.